Hi guys, and welcome back to Inner Child December. So if you missed last episode, we are doing a series for the month of December that focuses on different aspects of our inner child and how to work on our healing. And so every single Friday of December, we will have a new guest and a new episode that centers on a different aspect of inner child healing. Last week, we had Jordan Dan on to talk about relationships, and this week, we have Chelsea Horton of Healing Embodied to talk about dance and play and how to work on healing our inner child through movement. After this episode, we still have three episodes of the series left, and we will talk about some amazing topics with some amazing guests. But for this episode, I wanted to give a quick trigger warning before we move forward. So we will be talking about childhood trauma and eating disorders in this episode. As always, please take care of yourselves and your minds, and if this isn't an episode that you feel like you can listen to, no worries at all. Additionally, if you guys are interested in me doing another series, please feel free to reach out to me and suggest anything. I've really liked doing this series, and so I'm super open and excited to do another one. So you can either reach out to me on Instagram at @SerafinaBlog, or feel free to send me an email or even contact me through the contact form on my website. Other than that, I hope you guys enjoyed this episode. Hi all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today, we are going to be talking about dance therapy and how dance therapy can free our inner child with Chelsea of Healing.Embodied. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, of course. We've had Chelsea on before, but I wanted to have her back because for those of you who don't know, we're in our Inner Child series for December. And we have talked about quite a few things this month, but one of the things that we haven't got to touch on quite as much is playing and how we let our inner child play and have the freedom to maybe be goofy and silly and playful and childish when, especially when in our childhood, we didn't really get to do that. And so I thought, you were the first person I thought of when I started building this series. I was like, okay, I want Chelsea to come back on. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. But for those of you who maybe haven't heard your episode or want to know a little bit more about who you are, do you want to give a little background on yourself and on Healing Embodied and kind of how that all got started?
Sure. So Chelsea, once again, I'm a board certified dance and movement therapist, which means I have a master's degree in dance movement therapy and counseling. It's kind of like a dual degree in traditional counseling and then dance movement therapy theory and technique. And I've also completed over 3,600 hours of supervised clinical work. I worked in a psychiatric mental health facility for 2 years professionally. I've done internships with sexual trauma survivors, substance abuse. So I have a lot of experience just as a dance therapist. And then at the end of 2019, I started Healing Embodied, which is my company / passion / my personal journey merged with my professional journey. And I help and support people who experience anxiety in their relationships. So I've been doing that for 3 years now. What year is it? Oh gosh. Yeah, 3 years now. I also use pole dancing to support women in kind of breaking free from shame and anxiety and kind of rigidity and inviting more like confidence and flow into their lives.
I don't think I knew that part. I don't think I knew about the pole dancing. Yeah. That's amazing. It has quite literally been my dream to pole dance since I was like 18. It is on my bucket list. I have a friend from college that we would talk about it constantly, and we would be like looking on Groupons and shit and being like, okay, how do we make this happen? But it is something where if you grew up in a lot of religious shame and sexual shame, I was a little anxious about just like taking it from some random Groupon because I was like, what if there's some sort of like, what if it makes me uncomfortable, or what if it's the one thing I will say about like some environments where there's a lot of just like really sexual environments, there can be this kind of like environment where it can get a tiny bit peer pressure-y, and it can be like, oh yay, like, you know, everyone like, oh come on, hop in. And that was always my biggest fear, is that everyone else would be way more comfortable with it than me. And I would get really uncomfortable, and then I'd be like, you know, I'd panic or whatever. And so whenever we'd see like,
the Groupons, we'd always kind of back out for whatever reason. And we also were going to a really religious college at the time. So we were like, how do we like not get caught going pole dancing? But that's so interesting. I'd love to dive into that a little bit later too, because that's, I'm sure that probably, funny enough, probably also like dives, because I don't know if anyone else views inner child like this, but in my mind, inner child is like any age under 18.
Yeah,
that's how I view my inner child. And so there's obviously for a lot of people that grew up with sexual shame, there's obviously times within that like early adolescent teenage years where maybe you wanted to express yourself sexually and weren't able to. Right. So I'm sure that actually plays into inner child work. But, and also just as a context for anyone who wants to go back and listen to Chelsea's episode, she came on for episode 17. And we talked about relationship anxiety and dance movement therapy. So if you want a little bit more context on her and, you know, some of her work, we talk a lot more about it in episode 17. So feel free to go back and listen to that. But for today, we are going to focus on, like I said, inner child and play. So we can just dive right into it, I guess. So like I said, if anyone has like trauma, I know from the majority of people that I've talked to, especially coming from really religious environments, a lot of the times there was a lot of structure and rigidity to their childhood. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, and it was one of the reasons why I wanted to start the Inner Child series. A lot of the times we ask children to act their age. And there's this kind of pressure put on kids to be more mature, which, funny enough, act their age should just mean act like a child. For some reason it means like act like you're 20. And so I know a lot of the times from my personal experience and from people's experience, like people that I know that grew up in religious environments, we grew up in environments where leadership and building like good, mature leaders of the church was really emphasized. And so sometimes what that does, intentionally or unintentionally, is puts pressure on really, really young kiddos to be very mature and very like mature for their age and learn how to lead. And what happens when you put that much pressure on a kid is you often then lose the being a kid part. And so the play falls, and then the, you know, ability to just make mistakes and be able to act like a kid and
right.
make silly mistakes and have meltdowns and throw tantrums that are actually a part of being a child, that falls apart. And then a lot of the times what I've noticed in my life and others' lives is we get older and we kind of regress a little bit. And like, I've noticed that like, I had the freedom to kind of have these big meltdowns as a college student. And so then instead of having the meltdowns as a child, I was like in my 20s having like crying meltdowns because it was like I never got to actually process how to process emotions in a healthy way. It kind of just, we just skipped over that and went straight to maturity. And so if someone has a childhood that was like riddled with trauma, whatever that might look like, whether that's a really rigid parent, a really rigid religious structure, even just maybe not getting enough love, or even physical touch and just kind of feeling like they needed to grow up too fast. They often feel like they don't have the freedom to play and act in the way that they wanted to as a kid, whether that's moving their bodies or being hyper or being goofy or being silly or even just being emotional. So why is it important as adults who are trying to look back to our inner child and give them what they need to move and play and allow our bodies to do what feels best for them and for our inner child?
For me, play, when we're in a state of play, we're in a state of safety. And for, I also grew up in a very rigid religious upbringing too. For so many of us, we weren't allowed to, for me, I remember like there was that weight and that pressure as a kid, like, oh, I have to tell everyone about Jesus to save them from hell. Like, you know, I'm a child worried about all my friends. And so like, even from a young age, there's this like underlying sense that I'm not safe. The world's not safe. Doom is around the corner. And when we feel like we're not safe, that just squashes play. So to reclaim play is to find another avenue to learn how to feel safe in our bodies again, and to feel safe to be creative, because play, there is no end product. There is no end result. There is no box that we have to tick or fit ourselves into. There is no right or wrong when we are playing. Playing is the end all be all. It's playing for the sake of playing. Right. Playing to access creativity, to access vitality, to access feeling safe and alive in our own bodies, which is such a powerful reclamation when that has been taken away in our childhoods through trauma, religious trauma, through being in an unsafe or chaotic environment or an unpredictable environment, for being in an environment where it's not safe to make mistakes. So play kind of throws out the whole right or wrong, good or bad thing, and says, you get to be free to be creative, to express yourself, and it's safe to do so.
Right. And I'm sure that that's, I know that a lot of environments that feel unsafe are often very black or white and very fundamentalist, whether that's religious or not. There's often this rigidity where you don't have the ability to live in the nuance and like embrace the gray. And so therefore playing isn't really on the table, because it's like there always needs to be rules and structure, and there has to be a right and a wrong, and there's got to be some sort of limits. And play is intentionally not supposed to have those. That's kind of the whole point. So with that all being said, and this is a really broad question, but what are some ways that this can aid in healing from trauma specifically? I know safety, but is it something where it can it help release trauma in your body? Like, what are some specific ways that it helps?
Well, I think it's a big part of it is reclaiming our autonomy and our internal locus of control. Mm-hmm. So when we grew up in trauma, we're kind of always looking at our external environment to determine how we should be acting, what we should be doing. Like,
right.
You know, is daddy going to be mad? How is mom feeling? What does God think? And right. So we're constantly outsourcing our locus of control, like our internal control center, to the external environment. So play is this process of tuning back inward, feeling in like, what feels good for me? How do I want to express? How do I want to create? How do I want to be in my own body? And there's more of an internal locus of control, an internal motivator. Like, what lights me up? What brings me joy? What makes me laugh? And there's not this high emphasis on what's happening around me. Is it even okay to be doing what I'm doing? And we go through trauma, we often become adults who continue to hypervigilantly scan other people, mm-hmm. our environment. Like, what is allowed right now? What is safe? Is it safe for me to express myself based on what this person says or what's happening around me? And practicing play says, what feels good for me in my body? What brings me joy? What lights me up? How do I want to express myself simply because that's what I want to do?
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I know that for me, like, trauma work, and this is a really unexpected facet of trauma work that I was not prepared for at all. I knew there would be like identifying triggers, and I figured there'd be a lot of emotional ups and downs, but the intuition aspect of having to learn how to like trust my intuition and actually just like trust my gut, that was something that was incredibly unexpected. And I didn't even realize I had an issue with it until I dove really deep into therapy. And there would be this reoccurring theme of I would recognize red flags and I wouldn't listen to them. Or I would recognize that maybe something didn't feel right and I would just override it because I didn't actually have a sense of trust within myself as a person. I was always looking to other people to confirm whether or not my intuition or my suspicion was correct. And so I'm sure it's also a practice of just like practicing in a really safe and kind of low risk environment, practicing your intuition, because it's not like if you're doing an interpretive dance and you do a move that maybe wasn't solely based on intuition, the risk is like non-existent. You know what right. I mean? Like nothing's going to happen. Whereas if you're practicing that in an environment, like in a friendship or in a relationship, and you're trying to practice intuition and learn how to trust that, it can feel kind of, there's a lot more risk. Yes. And I know personally, this is a goofy way to practice it, but my partner loves football. And he does his, like, they're not fantasy picks. I don't even know what they are, to be honest, but it's some sort of football pick. And he asked me, like, maybe two months ago, like, hey, like, do you want to just pick my picks this week? Like, just for fun. And I was like, oh, sure. And so he would just name off all the teams that were playing. And in 5 seconds, I would just and just rattle them off. And I did really well. And so then he's having me pick them every week. And I told him, I think like 2 nights ago, I was like, it's fun. And I was like, it's also actually a really good practice for me to just listen to my intuition in an environment where there is no risk, because he's not like betting money on it. There's nothing. It's literally just for fun. And we both like have a fun time being like, oh my gosh, like I did good this week. Oh, I did bad this week. It's just kind of goofing around. And I try really hard to, the second I hear the teams, I just say whatever feels right. Like there is no thought, there is no, and I even try to purposely like outsource thoughts if it's like, oh, well, I know so-and-so plays for this team, and so they're probably going to be good. I try to like purposely like ignore that and just go with whatever felt like my gut felt. And it's a really low risk way to practice trusting my intuition in a really like safe environment where if I pick wrong, nothing's going to happen. And dance is another way to do that.
Yeah, I love that. We need that low risk playground, yeah. Sandbox,
yeah.
to explore feeling into our own impulses, our own desires, our own expression, our own voice,
right.
Both actually vocally and just energetically. So to engage in play, like what you're doing with your partner is you're playing together.
Right.
Like you said, there is no risk of punishment. Right. A lot of times as kids, there was always this risk of punishment. If I do something and it's wrong, I will be punished. I will be, you know, isolated. I will be like there's high risk there. And engaging in play says, okay, let me practice feeling into myself without worrying about the risk of if I'm going to be punished. And when I've worked with a lot of people, you know, as a dance therapist, when it comes to the more playful exploratory stuff, people freeze up
mm-hmm.
because they've lost, people who've experienced trauma and, you know, chronic anxiety, they've lost access to that ability to just let go of right and wrong and let go of the fear of doing it wrong, let go of the fear of punishment, let go of the fear of making a mistake. Like that ability has become so muffled by fear and trauma. And so actually play feels really difficult at first because it invites yeah. us into reaccessing our ability to just be and express without the worry and the fear of, is this right? Is this wrong? Will I be abandoned? Will I be shamed? Will I be judged? Will I be hurt? And so it's this slow, gradual process of, okay, like we're going to make the stakes really, really low. And sometimes when, even as we learn to play, we do have to have some sort of parameters. It's like, okay, we're going to play. And for someone who's been highly traumatized, it's like, that feels so overwhelming. It's like this big yeah. open field of possibility and choice. And for some people that is so far from their realm of ability at the time, it's like, okay, what if we played within this parameter? What if we have some boundaries and guidelines and you get to play within that? And dance is a great way for that because, I mean, dance more like technical dance. There's technique. Okay, we're going to learn these. And this is not dance therapy. I'm talking about dance as in dance. You know, okay, we're going to learn this technique. We're going to learn this routine. There's some parameters. There's some things you're learning, but within that you get to explore playing and expressing and being creative. And then kind of as I learned to trust my body more, my ability to just dance intuitively came so much more easily. Like, I wasn't worried about getting the techniques right or the moves right. It's like, okay, now I dance to express. Now right. I dance to explore and be creative. And and I'm not worried about getting moves right or wrong. But for some people at first, they kind of need that, some parameters as you learn to build the capacity to just trust what's coming through you.
Yeah. And I know, like, I don't know if you know that I used to dance. I was a dancer for like 12 years. And even in the actual like field of dance, there's kind of this like, I don't know if it's really old school or not, but even for people who like took dance and took dance classes or competitively danced, it can be such a rigid like field. And like, I remember as a kid, like my very favorite parts of dance class were when they let us like freestyle and we just got to like do whatever we wanted to do, because it was one of the only environments where I kind of just got to like play. But I know as an adult, I lost a lot of the confidence to even like, when I was a kid and we'd do freestyle, I would just like go fucking hard. Like, yes. And like, I didn't care about what, and it's like, you know, a lot of dance classes, there's the whole window, like the whole like glass panels where parents can watch. And I had like no shame. And as an adult, I've noticed that like, I would get really nervous about like, even like dancing at a club, or like, if I was at a summer camp and they had the whole like, oh, like even as a high schooler, like, oh, like come up and we're having a dance competition. It would be like, I would never do it. I'd just be so like mortified. Mm-hmm. And funny enough, when I had my biggest trauma in college, my body just like reverted back to dance as a safe place. Like my body knew that that was safe. And so I hadn't even taught myself that it was a coping mechanism. I hadn't trained myself, or I know with a lot of my other coping mechanisms, I have to make it muscle memory, because if I'm already in a heightened state of like dysfunction and emotional dysfunction, I'm not going to remember what my coping mechanisms are. And so I have to like really build it into my routine. And dance was something that was like so ingrained in me as a person that I just reverted back. And I was coming out of a codependent relationship, which I think dance is especially freeing for those types of environments, because a lot of the times you didn't have freedom to make choices and it was a really abusive relationship. And so if you're coming out of that environment, even if you're coming out of the environment with like family, you're able to then make all these choices, which like you said, can feel very vast and like very overwhelming. And I was like on the brink of having a panic attack, and I hadn't had a panic attack without my partner present in 2 years. And so the idea of doing that by myself felt like it was like fatal. And I turned on Maggie Rogers, who I like, if you've ever watched Maggie Rogers dance, I would really highly recommend it. If you're like looking for what does like even like I needed some inspiration before I started dancing. Like I needed some kind of, like you said, some sort of like parameters and some sort of guidelines. And she's amazing and hilarious and so fun to watch dance, because she just like it, she looks like she's a 7-year-old dancing in a freestyle class. Like that's how shameless it is, and it's so cool. Mm-hmm. And she does it on like freaking like Jimmy Kimmel. Like it's like really large environments that she's doing this. And so I put on her music, and there's no one in my dorm room, and I just like danced in the most like chaotic way possible. And I was sobbing and like shaking, trying to get my panic attack to stop, and it stopped. And I was like, oh my God, does this work? And 2 years later, got tickets to her concert and promised myself, I told my sister, I said, the only thing I'm holding myself to is I will dance to this music like I danced to it in my room. And so I went to the show, and it was the most chaotic like expression of movement you've ever seen in your life. I threw out my neck. I hurt my ankle. Like I went so hard. And I even apologized to the people around me. And I was like, I told the few people around me, because we were in the pit, like, you know, I told myself I was going to dance like I dance in my bedroom. I'm so sorry. Like I'm going to be in your space. I apologize. And I was crying the whole time. And it was like the most healing experience. And for me, that was a really safe environment to pick one artist that I felt comfortable dancing that way to. And I didn't dance that way to other artists, but it was like one type of music that felt comfortable for me to like align my, and it felt like just like my soul felt safe. And so that was where I chose to start. And I found it slowly creeping into my life in other ways, where if I was stressed, I'd find myself like pick up my dog and we'd just start dancing. And that was just like a way that I'd start to relieve stress. Mm. And so the parameters can be really helpful, and you don't always have to stay in those. Like I, that was just where I started, but it can be really helpful to give yourself, if you've had rules your whole life and they've always been so rigid, going somewhere where there's zero rules is like so daunting.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that so much. And I mean, that's when we look at children who are free to be who they are, to express, children who feel safe. That is how they are. They just express fully. They play, they, you know, dance like no one's watching. And the word you kept saying was shameless.
Mm-hmm.
Because trauma and just a lot of life experiences and just kind of being an adult in this world or growing up in this world, we internalize a lot of shame. And shame is one of those internal operating systems that says you can't play because you're going to look stupid. Mm-hmm. Like everyone's going to see how wrong you are, how dumb you are, how messy you are. Right. Shame kind of keeps us looking over our shoulder. Who's watching me? What do I look like? Am I doing this right? And really reclaiming play is kind of a parallel process to unshaming ourselves, unshaming our humanity, unshaming our expression, unshaming our emotions. I loved that you went to this concert and it was this time of just full-on play and expression and feeling, like just truly feeling and letting your body feel with you, like all of it's connected. And to do trauma work, a lot, you know, of course we do like the deep heavy stuff, but play is equally as important in our healing. And dance is just one of the many, many ways that we can play. Obviously, it's my favorite way. I'm a little biased, but play is essential in reclaiming our autonomy, our intuition, our expression, our creativity, our freedom, our vitality, and our ability to just be in our humanity without the shame stories that say you need to look over your shoulder and see what other people are thinking of you, or you're probably doing it wrong.
Right. And for, I want to also like address if people are a little bit, if this sounds super scary, like if someone's listening to this and they're like, oh my God, like this is the most out of my comfort zone thing I've ever heard in my entire life. Obviously you said setting parameters can be helpful, but if someone is listening to this and feels like, okay, I really do feel, I relate to the shame part. I relate to the like not having the ability to play and having my inner child kind of stifled a little bit. And I want to heal that. And I want to dive into that. But the goofiness and the silliness and the fear of shame is like really real. What are some like baby steps that they could take?
I would say start alone, right?
Okay.
Start in your own room, just kind of feeling what it's like to exist in your own body in a more free way versus like, you know, trying to jump out and have everyone's eyes on you. But you know, come up with a playlist, like your favorite songs, like the songs that you hear that when you hear them, like something just happens to you. Like when you hear these songs, something about your mood shifts. You start tapping your toes a little, bobbing your head. Those songs that move you, create a little playlist and, you know, be alone in your space. And just some parameters would be just go through one body part at a time. Start with your head. How does your head want to move to that song? How do your shoulders want to, and like maybe spend 10 seconds in each body part, maybe just 5, but how does your head want to move to the song? How do your shoulders want to move to the song? How do your arms want to move to the song? And at first, all those old stories are going to come in. You look stupid. You're doing this wrong. What am I supposed to be doing right now? That's going to be there, right? That's the old pattern. the familiar pattern emerging. Say, thank you, I see you. Set it aside and just keep playing. It's an exploration. It's an experiment. There is no right or wrong way to do it, but it's just getting you in the rhythm of how does my body want to express itself? And the song, again, that kind of provides some structure and parameter, kind of gives you some guidelines and motivation. The one body part at a time, again, gives you some structure and parameters versus saying, okay, move your body. It's what do I do? Okay, start with your fingers. How do your fingers want to move to the song? And kind of let your fingers, and then you all of a sudden you're making butterflies with your hands. And maybe the silliness starts to come out. Maybe you start, doing more of a full body movement, but start having those parameters. Okay, you set some time, have a playlist, and start with just one body part at a time, going through each body part. How does that body part want to move and express and play?
Yeah, I love that. Because I know I've had, there's so many, random, leadership things, whether it's, a leadership class or a leadership summit or even at church. I remember in church, there'd be little things and it'd be okay, everyone, we're just gonna move our bodies. And I would be oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And my fear levels would skyrocket. I even did an interview for a children's dance and play class. And I've worked with children for the last 10 years. And they just told us, as a part of the interview, they wanted us to just start dancing. And I was I was able to fake it, I think, well enough to make it seem like I was okay. But there were two other people who quite literally froze entirely and just couldn't move. And it was such a bummer because there's such a difference between playing off of the energy of someone else. And I think for me too, if you're working with kids, you can kind of tap into that childlike self because they're still childlike and they still don't have any shame. And so you can be so goofy and so funny and so playful with kids and you don't feel ashamed because they haven't entered the world of judgment yet. So they're not going to judge you, but there were no kids present. It was just a room of adults. And we were just told to just dance. And it made me so sad because these other two people literally got let go of the interview process because they couldn't dance. And I was no, I'm sure if they were with the kids, they would be fine. But putting adults on the spot, all of our shame, our shame is out of control at that point because that's such a wide, vast area of just play that I don't think most adults are super comfortable with. We haven't had that since we did the freestyle and dance class. And so it's terrifying.
Yeah, we're raised to become adults who society breeds us to stop doing that.
Right.
Sit still, don't be so silly. Be serious. Be an adult. Blah 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 blah. I'm 30 years old and I still feel like I am a child sometimes.
Yeah.
I cannot believe I have responsibility. because there's just so many voices in society that say, once you're an adult, play is for kids. Silliness is for kids. Mm-hmm. Dance is for kids. Art is for kids. And then we all become so disconnected from our own inner children and our own ability to continue playing and continue expressing. And the more shame and judgment we layer on ourselves and on other people. Whenever I do 99% of the clients I work with have never done dance therapy before. They're not dancers. They're just, the average person. And at first it's always so scary.
Yeah.
Because we've become so disconnected from our ability to play and express and just move without shame and be in our bodies without shame. And then, over the process of working together, you can see this kind of unraveling process. I see my clients start to kind of blossom and open up more. And then, by the end of our time together, it's like, okay, let's take a moment, get into our bodies. And they're already going. And at first it's there's that frozenness of what, I don't know what to do. The shame takes over, the fear takes over. Starting small, starting with parameters, even using props, mm-hmm. is really helpful. When I used to do dance therapy at the psych hospitals, I would have this, I had this squishy ball. It was like the size of a, like a soccer ball, and it, but it was like a squishy one. And I would have each person, okay, we're going to toss the ball around, and I want you to just move the ball however you want.
Oh.
So maybe that's just kind of tossing it side to side. Maybe it's, you know, circling it around your head. Maybe it's weaving it through your legs. Maybe it's hugging it. And like when you're done, pass it to someone else. And this is a room of adults, you know, adults with anxiety, depression, OCD, trauma. And, you know, at first people are kind of like, oh, but as the ball keeps moving around, people start getting more creative as they have this permission to play and be creative. And then people are getting kind of goofy. And next thing you know, a bunch of adults are in a room together laughing and playing. And even just in that small little warm-up, you know, I check in. How was that for everyone? How's everyone feeling? Oh my gosh, I feel so much lighter. I came in and I was really stressed and now I feel really relaxed because again, play brings us into that place of safety. And so, yeah, it could just be, you could start with a prop or just one body part at a time. There are lots of different inroads to sharpening that ability.
Right. And it's amazing too, when you have a group environment like that, if, and I'm sure like most people who are listening have some reference point for this, because like most people have been to a summer camp or have been to something at school or something at their workplace where there's some sort of exercise that you're all supposed to do. And, you know, if everyone is feeling uncomfortable, no one's going to do it. And the second that like one person just embraces the play, another person feels a little bit safer to do so. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how quickly something that feels almost like a hostile environment can become so safe so quickly. Mm-hmm. In college, I took a an elementary PE class, and it was supposed to be, I was in college to become a teacher originally. That was my first major. And so I was already in program, and it was an elementary PE class, and we were being taught how to teach elementary PE. And I assumed that that would be maybe a little bit of time in the gym, but primarily in a classroom learning how to do lesson plans. And our teacher, our professor, was this like 60-year-old PE teacher who had been doing this forever and was so fun and safe. And like, you have, this was a community college. And so you have people ranging from, I was in Running Start, so I was 18. So you have like high schoolers to people in their 40s. And it was a once a week class. And it was like Monday nights from like 6 to 9 PM. And our professor would bring snacks. And she would literally have us play elementary PE games. And so you have a whole bunch of adults on a Monday night playing dodgeball. And it was the most fun I had had in the longest time. And I was in like the most intensive part of my academic career because I was in high school and in college simultaneously. It was so stressful. And I remember like, that was the biggest safe haven in the world. And it wasn't even that we all made a decision to allow it to be a safe place. It was just that people started having fun and letting go. And it just very quickly transformed into this like really safe environment mm-hmm. where we'd all show up and everyone just knew it was safe to be goofy and it was safe to be themselves. Mm-hmm. And so it just became that space really quickly. And our professor would like teach us through play. And so we would play the games and then she'd teach us like ways to incorporate health into it, like talking about like for little kids, like if you're teaching first grade, like she would have the dodgeballs be different colors and have it be representative of trying to have lots of different colorful fun foods in your diet, like learning how mm-hmm. to eat different foods and oh, there's some spinach and like, you know, things like that, like in introducing different health facts into the games. Mm-hmm. And that was how she taught us how to do it. And at the very end of the semester, we all got to make our own PE game and teach it to each other and teach everyone how to play it. And it was just like, it was so fun. And I remember like people would be like, oh my God, you have a night class. Like that sucks. And I was like, no, this is like the best class I've ever taken in my entire life. Like I get to go play dodgeball for 3 hours. Like I'm fine, but like, thank you. And it was so fun. And we all, and I learned so much from it because I think the thing that people and this is the other part that I wanted to mention as well, is we've been talking about religious environments and abusive, you know, family dynamics. But I think even if you have none of that, society as a whole, like you mentioned, teaches you not to play. And so I think that just in general, culture has this assumption, especially like Westernized culture has this assumption that in order to be successful, there can't be an aspect of play. Mm-hmm. If you're in school and you're in high school, it's like, well, no, now we have to teach, we have to work on like success and learning, and play doesn't really work in that. Like, we got to be serious and we got to focus. And the funniest thing about that is the classes that I've been in, the ones that I've learned the most, not even necessarily had the best grades, but the ones that I still actually have that information in my brain and it's stuck in my head, and I actually learned it, I didn't just memorize it, those are the classes that had some sort of aspect of play and some sort of aspect of letting us release a little bit of that like seriousness. And this class, I remember I learned so much about like how to teach and how to create a safe space for students. And it was the goofiest class in the whole world. Like, it was just so goofy and so fun and did not feel like a class at all. And even if, like I said, even if you're not coming from this really intensive, abusive environment, you already have some of that shame built into you just simply from being a human and just like existing in society.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to totally butcher the actual numbers and all that, but I read something somewhere, again, I'm going to totally butcher it, but it was like, you know, it takes an average of 30 times of repeating something to really get it or to really learn it or to really remember it. But if you use play, it only takes 4 times of doing it. Like, play literally wires things into us more efficiently. Like, and just like you said, you know, the classes where we use play and kind of experiential learning, I actually remember that stuff.
Right.
And so it's always, you know, bringing it back to like what I do at Healing Embodied, you know, a lot of clients, they've been to the traditional talk therapy for years, and it's like some things still haven't clicked. And then they come do this work with us and things start clicking so much faster because we're using play and expression and movement and creativity. And for whatever reason, I'm sure there's lots of neuroscience. Again, I'm going to butcher all the facts and statistics, but the general sense is our brains and our bodies learn faster and remember more when we are engaging in a playful, exploratory, experiential process. We're engaging our whole self, all of our senses, not just our cognition and our mind and kind of repeating things, but our body is involved in the process too.
Well, and if your body is involved in the trauma, it would make sense that when your body is involved in the healing, it would click faster because that's part of the part of you that needs to be healed. I know that like for me, doing like yoga and doing like certain body movement types really brought a lot of relief and a lot of healing that I wasn't expecting because I thought that like just talking about it would do all of it. And then my therapist actually was like, no, like your body was what was harmed here. And so there needs to be an aspect of allowing your body to figure out how to feel safe again, whether that means through dance, whether that means through sex, whether that means through yoga or through, like for me, I've started rock climbing because I had so much trauma against my body from like self-inflicted trauma from an eating disorder that rock climbing is a way that I can move my body, trust my body again without focusing. For some reason, rock climbing doesn't feel like exercise to me. And so it doesn't cross that boundary of feeling like I'm working out. It feels more like dance, actually. Like there's a lot of aspects of rock climbing that are focused in like choreography and remembering certain techniques and stuff. And similarly, it is a little bit of a practice where it is playing and it's in a little bit of a higher risk environment, but it's still really controlled because I rock climb in gyms. I don't rock climb outside. And so it's like really safe. It's really, you know, and you get used to kind of that, like, I'm just going to be creative and try this move and just kind of play with it. And then if I fail and I fall off, all that happens is I fall like, you know, a foot or whatever, and I get caught by whoever's belaying me and it's safe and I don't get hurt. And it's like, all right, like, okay, well then we try it again. And so it's still practicing kind of that trusting your intuition and playing and giving yourself some freedom to move with a little bit of a higher risk, but it's still a really controlled environment. And so for me, I wouldn't have been able to do that 4 years ago. Like, that would have been too big of a stair step. But because I started with the dancing in my bedroom, and I started in the then dancing at the concert, and then, you know, all these little things, it felt like a good baby step on my, like, staircase to play and to freedom. And with that being said, I want to talk about the pole dancing, because we haven't – this was not in the outline, but I'm so interested, because I don't know how we've never talked about this. And maybe we haven't. I just forgot. But – I want to, so, okay, well, just, do you want to just talk to us a little bit about how you use pole dancing in, do you use it in dance therapy?
Yeah, we actually did our first ever in-person pole dance therapy workshop in July. Oh my God. I fused dance therapy with pole dance, and I swear, I was like, I think I've cracked the code to all life, because this is the most magical thing ever. But, you know, pole dance in itself, without the therapy aspect, is, I mean, I grew up a lot of religious shame, sexual shame. So it was like a way of reclaiming my sensual expression and being able to play and feel sexy and fun and free, and also really strong and empowered. And so many of the women at the studios, you know, it's women of all shapes, sizes, colors, ages, coming together, all celebrating our bodies. And for women to come in who maybe initially felt more insecure about their bodies, and, you know, being in classes with them for weeks and weeks and weeks, to see them kind of wear smaller and smaller clothes or feel more expressive and more free, like, there's just nothing more beautiful and empowering than a bunch of women being in a space together, just truly loving our bodies and celebrating our bodies and celebrating one another's bodies, versus a lot of women were very critical of our bodies or judge other women's bodies. To be in this space where there's a celebration and there is a shamelessness of who we are as women and who we are as sexual beings. So I'm like, okay, there's a freaking gold mine here. Like,
yeah,
this is incredible. Also one of the hardest things I've ever done. Like, rock climbing, it doesn't feel like you're working out, but oh my God, it is. Yeah. Gonna put that out there.
It's hard. The behind the scenes, I don't know if anyone's ever watched this, but the Jennifer Lopez behind the scene Hustler video where she learned how to pole dance. Like, she learned how to pole dance for the movie, and her thighs, like, she had bruises from, like, her knees all the way up to her crotch, just because it was, like, and she was, like, this is, I've never had to do anything harder than this, like, this is so difficult, but it's also, like, it's such a sport, like, it's so cool. I have, like, the utmost respect for people who pole dance. I think it's so cool.
It's very athletic. I just saw what was happening in myself, and just in the, you know, dance classes with other women, and I was, like, I want to combine, like, the therapeutic aspect to this, where we are naming the parts of ourselves that we believe are bad, not just our bodies, but, like, aspects of who we are that we have learned are bad and to feel shame for. Like, what are our shadows? What are the parts of us that we learned, like, are not allowed to be online, whether it's imperfection or messiness or, you know, bitchiness, like the parts of us that we're told this is bad, this is unlovable, this is wrong. These are the parts of yourself that you need to lock away into the shadows. And so the whole workshop was basically like shadow work, but with pole dance. So I was like, okay, what's the part of you that you often feel the most anxiety about other people seeing?
Yeah.
You know, so if you're someone who makes a mistake, does that give you the most anxiety? If someone were to be disappointed in you because you did something that other people perceive as selfish, you know, like the part of you that you believe is wrong, let's bring her online and play with her. And she's going to be the one that we explore. And we're going to see this part of ourselves as kind of like this bad girl. It was like kind of this bad girl, bring out your bad girl.
Yeah.
And let's make it sexy. Let's play with her. Let's dance with her. And it's just like this reclaiming of your bad parts through play, through movement, through expression, through, you know, some wearing something that makes you feel sexy and confident. It was awesome.
That's so amazing. And that honestly, like, it makes so much sense why that would work. Like that makes so much sense as to why that would end up being an environment where people feel safe and empowered, because not only are you embracing like the sexy side, but the coolest thing about pole dance, in my opinion, is like you're embracing the sexiness, but then it's also one of those sports that I think like really can bring out your strength, like your physical strength.
Yes.
And so then it also makes you feel really strong and empowered, but then you're also feeling strong internally because you're like embracing your sexuality. And it's all these different, like, I think it, that was one of the things that, through rock climbing, I've never thought of myself as a strong person ever, like athletically strong. I'm just like, yeah, that's not really me. And that was the thing that was the most empowering about rock climbing was I don't feel, and I also think just societally, like women often get put as the weaker, you know, species. And so then we just kind of get put down and we're seen as weak if we're emotional, and we're seen as weak if we're sexy, and we're seen as, you know, and there's all these different labels put on. And so when you get to embrace like the sexy side, and then you also feel strong and you also feel empowered, but then you also feel strong in your body and you feel confident and you know, all these things, like it's like this perfect concoction. Yes. Of like being able to feel free in your body. I can't even tell you how much I want to do that. That sounds so fun.
Do it.
That literally sounds so cool. Well, can I ask too? So like, if we're talking about all this and people maybe don't have access to dance therapy or don't have a way to, you know, get involved in that, are there ways that you can kind of mimic dance therapy at home and try to kind of work through that at home? Or are there ways to, or even do you know of any resources for dance therapy for people who maybe don't have access?
I mean, we are all bodies, so we all have access to our own bodies 24/7, all the time. Your body is a resource that is always there for you, and it's free. You know, it's your own body. So some ways to kind of, this is really intuitive wisdom, whether you want to call it dance therapy or not. It's what we've been doing as humans since the dawn of time, you know, is using dance and movement as a way to express and process. But so a couple, this is coming up in my new course I'm creating, so spoiler alert. So some elements of emotion is breath, sound, movement, posture, and sensation.
Okay.
And if you can focus on one or multiple of those, and when you're feeling an emotion, how does that emotion sound? Right? Can you play with just expressing that emotion through sound? How does that emotion breathe? How are you breathing? Like, can you really lean into the breath of that emotion or that experience? What are the sensations? How does that emotion move? If that emotion could borrow your body fully and have an expression, how would that emotion move? If it was a person, how would it dance if it was a person? And, you know, posture, like how do you hold yourself? So even just being aware of these different things and utilizing one or multiple of these elements of your emotion is a brilliant way that our bodies know how to process emotion. So even just making one small shift to your breath, or changing the sound, or changing the posture, or changing the movement, that's all going to impact how the emotion lives and moves through us. So you can literally tune into these elements of yourself and your body at all times, wherever you are, and play with those different elements in order to help you literally process emotions.
I love that. I love all this. This is all so like up my alley. I can't even tell you. No, I love that. And I love that it's also, I love the viewing your body as a resource, because I think that so often people's bodies are either shunned or even they're used by other people, and you're not really able to reclaim that as something that is a resource for you and a tool for you.
Right.
And so I love the idea that like it is just a part of you. It's who you are. And so it's always going to be with you. It's going to be online. And even whether if your body can't do certain things, there are ways to tap into your body's movement in other ways, whether that's, you know, if even for, I mean, I had Living with Clarity on a while back, And she's a wheelchair user, and she talked a lot about the fact that it surprises people so much when she says that she's a dancer. And she's like, well, why can't I be a dancer? I can still move my body in ways to dance. Mm-hmm. And she, like, dance is a huge, huge, huge passion of hers. And she uses her chair as a method of her body, as like an extension of her body to dance. And she uses her arms and she uses her facial expressions. And even when there are parts of your body that maybe aren't able to be used in ways that other people's bodies can be used, there are still ways to use your body as a resource and tap into your body's movement. And even if that's just practicing breath, that's still movement. Like there's still ways to practice the movement. And our bodies, we get taught throughout our entire lives, just as in society and westernized society, to disconnect from our bodies and to, you know, just like become these like workhorses that we don't listen to our bodies when they're hurt or when they're tired or when they're stressed out and all of those things. It really has to be like such a conscious practice to become in relationship with your body again.
Yes.
And we have that as kids. Like we are in relationship with our bodies as kids, and we're very attentive, like, ow, that hurt. Or like, I'm hungry. And it's like, there's this like visceral, like, no, I need my needs met. And there's this disconnect that happens as we get older, even through simple needs like feeding and rest. Like we start to just disconnect ourselves from those, and we don't listen to our bodies. And all of a sudden we're skipping two meals and we've slept 3 hours and, you know, our body is completely neglected. And so I love the idea of like coming back to your inner child by also just coming back to your body.
Yes.
Because as children, we really are in tune with them to some extent. Obviously, we don't have, you know, a lot of the actual like mental, like deep mental awareness of how our bodies work. But at least if we cut, we're going to make people know that it hurts or let people know that it hurts.
Yeah, it's an innate intuitive ability that we're all born into this world with. Like a baby is fully embodied. Everything is expressed through movement and sound and breath. Like, look at a baby. They're not saying anything with their words. They're not even thinking about things, but the way they experience the world is through these elements, through their senses. And like you said, over time, we learn to disconnect from that. So it's coming back to our own innate wisdom that lives in our bodies.
Yeah. No, I love that. Well, I want to end on this last question. So for people who are listening to this and maybe the full play and the full movement still sounds daunting, even with the parameters, even with all the different examples, it still feels really scary. And maybe the shame's a little bit too much right now, or maybe they just need a different avenue to express some of that inner child play. Can you give them like one or two ways to still give their inner child some grace and some freedom to play and to be their authentic self if movement sounds really scary still?
Yeah, I mean, art, singing, even just being outside in nature, like, kind of connects us also with that, just a more intuitive, innate part of ourselves. Like, it doesn't have to be this big expressive thing. It can be even just listening to music, like kind of surrounding yourself with creativity. It doesn't have to be dance or movement. It can be whatever you want it to be, whatever. And maybe even think about, what did I like to do as a kid? Mm-hmm. What were some of those things? For me, I loved dinosaurs. I wanted to be a paleontologist. Everything was dinosaurs. And I have a dinosaur tattoo.
I love that. That's so cute.
And I have lots of dinosaur art in my house. So maybe you think about, what were some of the things that I liked as a kid? And can I incorporate that in little, you don't have to get a tattoo of it. Like, you don't, you know, but what are some little things, little ways you can incorporate that into your life? Is it getting a picture of something that you really liked? Is it reconnecting with a hobby? You know, it could be anything.
Yeah, that was the first, I guess, not warning sign, but the first like heads up that my inner child needed to be healed was I hit like 20. 21 maybe. And all of a sudden I was like, I really want to eat chicken nuggets and ketchup every day. And I really want to like color, and I would like get a coloring book. And I've seen so many people in their early 20s go through this, where it's like you hit this age and you have the freedom mm-hmm. because you're out of the house and you don't, maybe you're out of college or whatever, and you've got this like, you have the freedom. And so then all of a sudden your inner child finally feels even maybe a little bit safe to just kind of come to you and say like, hey, I need chicken nuggets, or like, I need a coloring yes. book or whatever. And like, even like you see people in their 20s starting to get stuffed animals because it's like, maybe that was what made them feel really safe as a kid. Or you see them starting to, you know, do their makeup in a really fun way, or yeah. wear hairstyles they loved as a kid. And you see these little ways that it starts to come out. Yes. And for me, like, that was like, and also I bought a ton of children's books. That was one of the things that I did as like a 20-year-old, was I bought all of these like children's books that like meant a lot to me as a kid. Mm-hmm. And they were a lot of the ones that just like really focused on like your worth and you being enough. And I would like, me and my friends in college, I had multiple friends in college who bought me children's books because they knew that was something that like I would read them and like just feel really like seen and held. And that was like just a little way of nurturing my inner child. And that was far, far, far before I was able to do the Maggie Rogers concert dancing thing. Like the chicken nuggets came way before that. Yeah. And so that was like my little like, you know, gateway into healing my inner child was chicken nuggets.
Yeah, go to a park and sit on a swing, you know, like do things that are like a little bit nostalgic that kind of bring you back. Whether it's the chicken nuggets or apple juice, me and my husband still buy apple juice. And whenever I drink it, I immediately still, I'm like, this is not an adult drink. Like this is, for me, I have that association. So like, I love that you said these little tiny ways, these little gateways to accessing your inner child and that playful part of you.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for coming on. I love talking with you. I love having you on. And I also just love what you do. I think it's so unique and so fun. And like I said, like it is my, the last time we talked, I was like, I need to find a dance therapist. And then I didn't. And I'm like, okay, I need to go on like Psychology Today or whatever and figure out how to get myself involved in this, because I think it's so up my alley. But for people who want to find you, or who maybe even might be in your area, do you have resources for people? Your Instagram, you said you had a new course coming out.
Yeah, a couple things. First of all, if you want to find a dance therapist in your location, go to the ADTA.org and there's like a find a dance therapist near you database. Perfect. But if people want to find me specifically, you can find me at my Instagram at healing.embodied. My website is healingembodied.com. All my services are virtual. I work with people all around the world, which is
amazing.
So freaking cool. So that's where you can find me.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much again for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the blog on Instagram at Serafina Blog and visit us online at serafinablog.com. And you can also visit the podcast at mindfulmindspod.com and on TikTok at mindfulmindspodcast. And then you can visit me on TikTok for more deconstruction content at Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys next week.